So maybe this really is a golden age of narcissism. Jeffrey Kluger is editor-at-large at Time Magazine and Time.com. He's also the author of The Narcissist Next Door, Understanding the Monster in Your Family, in Your Office, in Your Bed, in Your World. Steve Paulson talks with him.
Jeffrey, you have a very short dedication at the beginning of your book. Could you tell us what it is?
Yes, I dedicated the book to me. And it seemed entirely fitting. Now, in fairness, the original dedication was a little more over the top. At first, it was going to say, "What the hell with love to me?" But my editor, the very smart Jake Morrissey at Riverhead Books, said, "We want people not to quit taking you seriously on page one." So he asked me just to dial it down to, in keeping with the times, to me.
So I have to ask, are we living in the golden age of narcissism?
We are. It's a little more complex than that, but the numbers do suggest that over a 25-year period from 1979 to 2004, overall narcissism scores in the country, scores on the standardized test given to look at narcissism, have gone up about 30%. That's a very significant number over a very comparatively short time. And it's a time that entirely precedes social media, which tells you something about the fact that social media may be potentiating narcissism a little bit, but it's not behind the trend.
How do you define a narcissist?
Well, that's a really good question with a somewhat complicated answer. Narcissism, in its truly high-octane, weapons-grade clinical form, which is what psychologists call narcissistic personality disorder, affects only about 1 to 3% of the population, which is pretty consistent with the other personality disorders like paranoia and histrionic personality, borderline personality, and so forth. But unlike those other disorders, it tends to exist also in a whole range of shades all the way down the behavioral spectrum. So while you may only have a few percent of the population with clinical NPD, you have a whole lot of other people with lowercase n narcissism. And it's all defined in varying degrees by a sense of grandiosity, a profound sense of entitlement, and an utter lack of empathy, which is the best way to continue being a narcissist, because if you have no ability to be aware of the effect you're having on the people around you, it's very easy to go on misbehaving. One of the things also that gives narcissists as much power as they have is they are incredibly charming, incredibly charismatic. They're full of energy. They make a sale very well, whether it's a literal sale or a friendship sale or a romantic sale. So we all get very easily drawn into their gravitational field.
So it's complicated. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, my God, keep these people away from me. They're just nothing but trouble. Actually, we like being around them, at least in short doses.
Absolutely. They're a real sugar buzz. And in a lot of ways, they do a whole lot of good. Narcissists have drive. Narcissists are the ones who are willing to step forward and push a great idea. Steve Jobs may have been a terrible person to work for, but he was a brilliant man, and he was profoundly narcissistic. The same is true of Bill Gates.
Let's talk about a few of these people. Steve Jobs, why was he a narcissist?
Well, he was very abusive of his subordinates. He was terribly condescending. He was quite foul-mouthed. He would generally mock the work he didn't like and could be quite abusive even when he was courting people to come work for him. He once said to an employee at Xerox he was trying to hire, "Everything you've done in your life to this point is, let's say, crap," though he used a somewhat coarser word. He said, "Why don't you come work for me?" Now, this was typical of the way Steve Jobs would approach people. And yet, he was an icon, and he created iconic products. And the great irony about Steve Jobs is you could call it one of the most narcissistic marketing lines in history, or actually not narcissistic, but presumptuous, when one of the iPad ads, when it was just being introduced, was sold on the slogan, "You already know how to use it," which is quite remarkable because that is true of a lot of Apple products. And the reason it's true is because Jobs understood people. He did say, often the public doesn't know what they want until you give it to them. And he was right about that. So one of the great ironies of Steve Jobs is that he was profoundly attuned to what people want and what they need and what their appetites are, but he was terrible at appealing to those people on a one-to-one basis.
So it raises the question, if we're not working for someone like Steve Jobs, but we do have a narcissistic boss, Any suggestions?
Well, run away as quickly as you can, certainly.
You're saying you can't reform these people.
Well, no, you can't reform these people. There's triage work you can do. There are ways you can protect yourself. Narcissists in general, but particularly narcissistic bosses, are terrible credit grabbers. Any idea that crosses their desk, they lay claim to. So it's often helpful to share your idea with your coworkers before you present it to your boss, and even better, present it for the very first time in a meeting where there are eyewitnesses as to whose idea it was. Bosses are also terrible about laying blame. Since the very idea of narcissism, or one of the qualifying features of narcissism, is that narcissists take criticism terribly, partly because in many cases narcissism, it comes from what's called the mask model of narcissism. It's actually a masquerade to hide its exact opposite, a deep well of self-loathing and lack of self-esteem. So when you feel terrible about yourself, any criticism at all leaves you very defensive and very threatened. As a result, the narcissist's ego is a very brittle thing.
I mean, that's interesting because, I mean, often when we see these people, I mean, charismatic, cocky, kind of prancing around, you're saying actually they're often covering up a kind of self-loathing?
Well, in many cases, not in all cases, by all means, and athletes, I think, are especially good examples of narcissism actually being exactly what it looks like, you know, a profound sense of exaggerated worth, a feeling of being outside the rules, a feeling of being infinitely more entitled than other people. And part of the reason is that athletes do operate outside the rules.
You also say that one of the traits of a lot of narcissists is they cheat, they lie.
They do cheat and lie because the ends are vastly more important to them than the means. I asked a couple of researchers about this because I was struck by the fact that, you know, you look at people who will cheat on a test or who will plagiarize someone's work. Well, the appeal, as any writer will tell you, of doing the work is the byline and knowing that it's an authentic byline. The appeal of winning a Super Bowl trophy isn't just the hardware you get. It's the fact that you know you did this thing. You know, if you win, I don't know, the Tour de France, think about Lance Armstrong, the appeal to it is knowing I really am better than anyone else at what I'm doing. I have achieved a very difficult thing. For narcissists, it's not about that. It's about the recognition. And if it's a fake A you score on a test, if it's a fake byline you just got because you plagiarized or made up everything you just wrote, or if it's a fake Tour de France because you juiced in 7 straight races, well, that's okay because the world thinks I'm better than everyone else. And the outside in view, what they think of me, is much more important than the inside out view, in part because often that inside out view already stinks.
You did a lot of research for this book. You know, you looked into the nature of narcissism, personality traits. Did any of this hit home for you? I mean, did you ever sort of think, oh my God, you know, I'm like that in some ways.
Yeah, it did, particularly in relationships. There were more than one occasion in my life when women I was involved with or friends would point out that I was a wee too interested in what I had to say and in sucking the air out of the room and a bit uninterested in what other people were saying. I did tend to dominate conversations. I did have a terrible sense of entitlement, and as I wrote in the book, you know, it got me fired from one job.
You have to tell that story. I mean, you write about this at the very end of the book.
Yeah, there was a boss I had who was terribly narcissistic. He had gotten his job in the first place by simply pitching a magazine company that they should launch a magazine, and oh yeah, they should hire him and give him control of the payroll, and they did. And you know, as I say in the book, you don't sink a half-court shot like that being shy. So I went to work for him. And I and a few other senior people, were having a conversation with him one day about, you know, the fact that we were overworked and underpaid, and that's a fairly common grievance. And in our case, it was manifestly true. But I kind of couldn't climb down from it. And the more I talked and the more voluble I became and the more insistent I got, the quieter my friends became. And if I had seen at all the put a lid on it signals they were probably sending me with their eyes. I certainly didn't notice them or respond to them. And in fact, I flattered myself to think, they've only gone silent because they don't have the courage I do, and they're so impressed by my straightforwardness. So the next day I got to work, and the boss's secretary said he wanted to see me, and I fully assumed that this was my raise and promotion, which I assumed I had argued for so effectively the day before. And in fact, it was a summary dismissal. It was the only time in my life I've ever been fired from a job. I was 31, which meant I was just far along enough in my career for it to really hurt and amount to a legitimate setback, but just young enough that I could overcome it without too much problem. But it did set me back a year or two in the tempo of my career. And I learned a lot. And yes, I was outraged for the first 6 months after he fired me. And it took me a long time to think, finally, but yeah, I might have been right, but I blew off way too much steam, and I was flat out insubordinate, and narcissist though he may have been, he was well within his rights to can me, and he did.
Well, this is quite a fascinating topic. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I love talking about this, actually. I'm just vain enough that I could stay on the radio all day.
Jeffrey Kluger is the author of The Narcissist Next Door. He spoke with Steve Paulson.